Good morning, beautiful people. On this Friday edition of Baseball Barbacast, we will recap the most important moment in sports, my alumni baseball game, and also talk about seeing James Wood in person.
And it's Friday, so we're giving you the good, the bad, and the ugly, and we're getting real ugly on this Friday. It's Baseball Barbacast.
Hello and welcome to Baseball Barbacast, the only baseball podcast in the world that can't raise its right arm over its head without feeling elbow pain. I'm Jake Mintz. That's Jordan Schusterman. We have four arms and 3.8 of them work.
What a surprise. As you left us off with on Wednesday, you were heading down to play in your high school alumni game. Jake, good morning. It is Friday. And listen, you posted something on our Instagram story hinting at some potential elbow pain, a potential IL stint. I guess The first place to start is this a 15-day or a 60-day situation for your elbow?
We're going to do some rehab, some PRP, kind of see where things go, try and work through it. The long-term prognosis is still up in the air. I'm going to get a 25th opinion. We are going to talk about my alumni baseball game hilariously on this episode of Baseball Barbacast. I was also in Pennsylvania last night at a AAA game to see Nationals top prospect James Wood. I talked to James, did an interview with him for about 20 minutes before first pitch, which was very enjoyable and very insightful. Got to learn a lot about him. We're also going to chat about the Orioles finally getting swept, the incredibly dangerous play that happened in Chicago last night. Could have seriously been hurt. And we'll read an email before doing the good, the bad, and the ugly. But Jordan, we must start in suburban Washington, D.C.
Yes, we must. As we teased on Wednesday, you were going down there to play in a baseball game. Jake was going to play baseball. Now, you were around baseball all the time. You coach baseball. So I imagine You've been wearing a baseball glove at frequent intervals in over the last year plus. But it has been a while since you suited up and tried to get a hit or get people out. That's been a while.
I do one a year, usually. I try and play one baseball game a year just to remember that I can still do it. You know, it's like, you know, I'm sure there are people who took, you know, like German in high school and they'll like drop a line of it every once in a while just to know they still have that bone. That's how I feel about playing ball. Okay. Last year I played in one men's league game where every men's league game I've ever played in, Jordan, I was like the young buck, right? I was like the young guy. And this time was a completely different dynamic. I was the second oldest alumni in attendance. I played so long ago that the color of my uniform was different than the current teams and everyone else on the alumni team, except for one. We went from navy to royal blue while I was out here being old. However, I had a grand old time.
And let me just say, you may have been the oldest, but you know, our friendship really kind of went to another level when you were starring at the Jewish Day School in Rockville, Maryland. And I remember, you know, going to some of these games and hearing about all these, oh my God, Jake threw 150 pitches to beat this this other homeschool tiny team. Private school. Wow, what a legend. But I have to say, you know, they posted a photo of you competing, which I think you shared on our Instagram, and it ripped me back. I mean, it really did. I was like, there he is. That's still Jake. You know, going under and slinging it, but I think people want to know, like, did you throw a complete game? Did you go a complete game? You know, going sidearm again? No, it seems like it was a much briefer pitching appearance. So I guess I wanted a brief recap of what else happened in the game for you specifically.
No, I did not throw a complete game. There were many alumni who wanted to pitch, so I threw one inning. I threw the second inning of the game, and I would say that I did a good job. Went out there, threw gas, threw two fastballs by the first kid, and then went up to him after I got the ball back and said, like, what do you want? Mm-hmm. I said, like, what pitch do you want? He said, slider. I threw it and hit him in the ass with it by accident. Mm-hmm. Everyone in the crowd went like, ooh, which lets you know that, like, you know, maybe not a whole lot of baseball has been watched recently because it was not malicious. but it was very delightful.
Don't they know that's your thing? Did these people not follow your career into the UAA at the Division III level, where the hit by pitch was like your that was your move? That was like your and it was in high school too,
right? And a college teammate of mine texted me and said, HBP for Jake Mintz is like a serial killer's calling card. Like they leave at the crime scene. Like Jake Mintz was here. One HBP.
You see that in the box score, you know who was on the mound. But it sounds like the stuff was there. And it sounds like you made it out of that inning not feeling good, you know, even if you had a couple base runners. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, I hit the kid, then I strung kid out, two ground outs, threw like 12 pitches. Okay. Like I barely pitched relatively, had a couple at bats, had a nice little knock, stole home, which was hilarious.
Love that for you.
Stolen
bases are up now, so it's no surprise that even Jake Mintz can steal home.
I'm just a grinder out there. I did the thing where you're on third base and you pretend like you're not paying attention to draw the throw from the catcher to third, and then when they throw it, you run home. Still works.
Might work at this low level of high school baseball. I don't know if catching, you know, in the big leagues, I'm not sure if you're fooling William Contreras with that one, but maybe. Yeah. Yeah. That's Jake. Jake's not paying attention. We've seen that before.
You joke, but Christian Yelich literally did this like 3 days ago, against the Marlins.
Against the Marlins. It's
would the Marlins win the Potomac Valley Athletic Conference?
Yes, they would. Yes, yeah, I think yes, they definitely would. Yeah,
I think they would. But as a whole, I had a delightful time.
That's great.
The game was in honor of the father of a friend of mine who passed away last year. And so it was good to see a lot of people I hadn't seen in a while and to go and like be around the high school program, which, you know, it is not particularly relatively competitive baseball in the grand scheme of things, right? However, the people, and this is true for all the baseball we cover, talk about, the people that are in these places doing the baseball like day in and day out, it means something to them. And it should mean something to them, and it should mean something to their parents and their friends and the teams they play against and the people associated with it. And even though like they would get curb stomped by, you know, like St. John's,
right,
you know, that doesn't mean that it is any less meaningful for the people who are involved.
They're going out there and competing. And no, truly, I mean, I think that level of baseball informs the next level of baseball, which informs the next level of baseball. And that's what we love, right? And that's why if you listen to the show, you know that there's not a level that we will not appreciate and find something to love about it. And this one, of course, is a little bit more personal than others. But I appreciate you sharing that experience, and I'm glad, even though you woke up with a bit of a sore elbow yesterday, it seems like you're going to be.
Yeah. Fine. Don't think after taking a day, don't think I'm going to need to go on the IL because my ligament is probably has been torn. And so, you know, what's the difference?
That's good. Well, I'm glad because the alumni squad, they need you. They need you down the stretch. There are not that many other arms that I think that if they're going to want to win some ball games, they need you there, Jake Mintz. So hey, I hope you're okay.
We went 1-0, baby. 1-0. If I ever lose an alumni game, it will be such a cannon blast to my ego.
It's going to be a dark day.
You don't understand, dude.
This podcast, again, like we talked about the potential injuries, but fortunately the confidence is still there for me, at the very least.
I'd rather tear a ligament, you know, that would be
high schoolers.
Then lose to high schoolers. I'll tell you that. That's for damn sure. All right, enough mediocre baseball. Let's talk about the Chicago White Sox.
Let's level up, baby.
I know we've been jokey so far in this podcast, maybe a little jovial about a topic that doesn't really matter to anybody but us, which is why we led off with the show with it. But I want to get really serious now, Jordan, because what happened in Chicago last night was flat out dangerous. Okay. What Andrew Vaughn tried to pull on one of baseball's brightest, most beautiful young stars.
Oh my God, I know.
Could have been, you know, lasting injury. It could have been really horrifying stuff. And so I just want to thank the umpiring crew at Guaranteed Rate last night.
For Adrian Johnson, Junior Valentine. I mean, this was an act of courage an act of public service, protecting and serving the community, and making sure that our hero, Gunnar Henderson, will not be at risk of such terrors that is Andrew Vaughn walking backwards at a slow pace.
Yeah. And upholding justice takes bravery.
Yes.
You know? And so we tip our cap. This, let's take off our joke hats. This, umps are, have cop energy a lot of the time. And this play was the umpire equivalent of the Scottie Scheffler arrest.
That seems to be the correct joke to make topically. I haven't followed the Scheffler saga too closely. We are not golf people, but I've seen enough. Enough on the timeline. And it sure seems like, I don't know, where does this rank? Right. Which is a more over the top
reaction?
Okay. What happened here? What happened here? Jake, describe the situation. It's really not that. I know we just talked recently about how we don't really love talking about controversial umpiring rulings. However, this one is unintentionally very funny and I think is worth acknowledging. So it's the bottom of the ninth. Andrew Benintendi is batting. The Orioles are up 8-6. There are runners on first and second. And there is one out, and Gunnar Henderson is playing shortstop, and Andrew Vaughn is standing on second base.
The Orioles have already allowed four runs in the ninth inning to trim their large lead to just two runs.
The White Sox are trying to come back here in this crucially important game for, I guess, the Orioles, who, you know, coming off getting swept, they're like, well, we can't lose to the White Sox.
Need
because
that
if,
one.
If you get swept and then blow this game to one of the worst teams in baseball, now the Orioles actually might not be feeling good for one day of the season. However, the umpires made sure that was not going to be the case. So what happens next?
Ball's popped up on the infield, basically like right in front of where the shortstop would play. Gunnar Henderson ranges forward and in doing so has to shimmy his way around the dangerous presence of one Andrew Vaughn, who is kind of backpedaling towards second base to make sure he is, you know, secure in the harbor that is one of those white bags. And the infield fly is called. The batter is out. And then the umpires say, hold on there a second. Well, hold thy horses. Because Andrew Vaughn, by brushing up against Gunnar Henderson, by impeding his path, obstructed. Interfering, and therefore is out. The game is over because there was one out. White Sox manager Pedro Grifol lost his top, understandably.
Yes.
And the game kind of ended abruptly. It was very bizarre.
However, even Pedro Grifol said afterwards that he was not mad about how they called it. He was mad about the rule. And you can kind of tell, which is fair too, right?
I'm going to read the rule.
Read the rule. Yes, okay? Because this really isn't that complicated. It's very stupid, but it isn't that complicated.
This is on MLB.com. It says fielder right of way, which is not obstruction, okay? Fielder right of way. Fielders have a right, damn straight, to occupy any space needed to catch or field a batted ball and also must not be hindered while attempting to field a thrown ball. One more paragraph here. If any member of the batting team, including the coaches, which is so funny, interferes with a fielder right of way to field a batted ball, the batter shall be declared out. If any member of the batting team, including the coaches, interferes with a fielder right of way to field a thrown ball, the runner on whom the play is being made shall be ruled out. In both cases, the ball will be declared dead, and all runners must return to their last legally occupied base. That's it, baby. So infield fly, one out, you got in this guy's way, that's two outs. Now, this is a great example. There is a difference, my friends, between the letter of the law and the spirit of the law. Had Junior Valentine kept his hands in his pockets, do they have pockets? In his proverbial pockets. Yeah,
they definitely have pockets. They have pockets. Are you kidding me? They're standing there during pitching changes. Those hands are in their pockets for sure. Yeah.
He could have kept them hands in them pockets and nobody would have batted in an eye. No Orioles employee would have raised a stink about the dangers of this play. If the Orioles go on to win or lose, no one on the postgame show is breaking down, did the umps miss one with Gunnar Henderson being brushed by, right? And I think for me, I understand that Grifol is mad about the rule, like the rule itself, but there are so many rules that are just not always enforced And this is one of them that is never enforced this strictly. And so for Junior Valentine to be a stickler about this in this situation, I think is that's on him. Like, yes. And I understand that it is confusing. Like, okay, it's in the rule book. You have to uphold it. But just have a modicum of feel. Like, have an iota of feel here. Just don't do it. You know, think about how many umpires over the course of the last, you know, 10 years that we've been obsessed with the sport have just simply not done this. Right? And this guy did this.
Right. And so, no, I obviously agree with that. It's a very silly way to end a ball game. However, yes, let's just be grateful that this was the outcome of a game between one of the best teams and the worst teams, and a situation that will probably not define the playoff race. But hey, maybe, you know, maybe when we get to the end of the season and the Orioles and Yankees are battling for the division, Yankees fans are going to be furious at Junior Valentine for not allowing the White Sox to come back against a still shaky Craig Kimbrel.
He was fine last night.
No, he was fine. I know. I'm just saying that, you know, that's still someone that you could say, well, oh, it was one pitch away from blowing it. Who knows? So anyway, it's unfortunate, but it is definitely very goofy. And yeah, again, it's the kind of thing that that would happen to the 2024 White Sox. They find ways to lose, if they are not the ones actively doing the searching. that was very silly. But again, thank you to this umpire. Chris, I want to make sure we thank everyone. Ramon De Jesus, Jeremy Riggs, this crew, Adrian Johnson, Junior Valentine. Thank you. Thank you for your
thank service. You. Thank you, man. Thank you. Well, where would we be? Where would our sport, this podcast, and the nation be without you? Yeah. We don't know. The Orioles, though, it was not all joyous this week because they were swept for the very first time since the protozoic era. They went into St. Louis, Missouri, and experienced some misery as the Cardinals took all three games of that series. It was the first time, I believe, since May of 2022 that the Orioles were swept in a regular season series. The first regular season sweep of Adley Rutschman's big league career.
Man.
Which is the best way to kind of show this. What does this mean? Nothing. Yeah. Like, there's no actual importance here. It's a great fun fact that is now dead.
Yeah. It means that... Also, it took some bizarre rain delays and like a suspended game. Like, it was a very odd series. It didn't really feel like a normal sweep. But credit to the Cardinals, who pitched well, and they pitched well. They, like, actually, Lance Lynn was awesome against the very good Orioles lineup. So Cardinals kind of finding some life. So credit to them. But no, as for the Orioles, I don't think we are too concerned about them. But they were not the only sweep. I did want to talk about one other, you know, sweep this week. We've talked a lot about the Phillies. They've gotten off to this unbelievable start. They have the best record in baseball. They are now 37-14. They've won six in a row. They just swept the Rangers, who I actually want to talk about. But did you have something on the Phillies quickly?
Did you see the Phillies attendance yesterday?
Yes. Yes. This is it, man. This is the whole thing. And by the way, I think that this is not just a reflection of having the best team in baseball. I think this is related to, again, ownership and teams like San Diego and Peter Seidler, who, like, when you show as an owner, like, all I care about is winning. We just want to win. We want to spend money on baseball players. We want to do everything. The fans will come back. So they not that they haven't been obviously awesome fans in recent years, but like, they will show up near sellout on a Thursday afternoon. Basically,
42,377 Thursday afternoon in May. Okay. School's not out. That's like the craziest part of this, to be honest with you, is that school's not out. Like, I understand, Memorial Day, holiday weekend, maybe there are a lot of schools that like went to the game, whatever. But to put 42,000 people, I mean, I'm not trying to be like a Phillies, you know, booster here.
No, it's fine.
But because other teams do this.
Yeah.
That's the time to do this. Other teams do this too. But it's just a reminder of what caring and investing in the product on the field does for the fan base. It's a great reminder of that.
Yes. However, while the Rangers have also done that to some degree by spending a lot of money on baseball players and, of course, reaping the rewards by winning a World Series last year, they are not doing so hot. No. We'll talk about the AL West as a whole a little bit later. You can decide whether that's going to be good, bad, or ugly. But I just wanted to zero in on the Rangers here for a couple of minutes, just because they are now 24 and 27. They're still in second place, but I wrote a little bit about them earlier this week, just about the notion of how different this is from last season, not just because we know, of course, they're going to win the World Series, but last year, May is when the Rangers were on fire. Like, this is when it was like, oh my God, like, this team is really good. They went 18-9. Their offense was, if not the best in baseball, one of, you know, two or three best. And now, despite a very similar cast of characters, I know there's some guys missing due to injury, like Josh Young, but this offense has just not gotten going. And the pitching, particularly the bullpen, even though, you know, they bring in Kirby Yates and David Robertson, who have both been exactly what you could have hoped, everything beyond them has been a mess. Leclerc has not been good. Josh Spores is injured, of course, the World Series hero from last year. And they are just going to have, now, fortunately, you know, they're not falling in that big of a hole because their division is not very good, apparently. But, like, they're going to have to get better as the season goes on instead of what happened last year, where they kind of built enough of a lead where they could kind of, not coast, but clearly they lost the division at the end of the season and then they got to go on this run in October. I just am really interested to see how aggressive they are in addressing these moves at these roster holes at the deadline, or if we really are just waiting for them to get healthy on the mound, if we are just waiting for them to get healthy on offense and for those guys to find their stride, because I thought that this lineup was going to be even better with guys like Carter, with guys like Langford. I know he's hurt. And it's just kind of stagnant right now. It's just not quite there. Seager's starting to find it, but it's just they're just not great right now.
I'm not trying to be patronizing. And I understand that I'm oversimplifying here. Okay. I get that. But I'm just going to tell everyone a little secret. Okay. Ready? If you're waiting for Jacob deGrom to get healthy, if that is vital to your roster construction, you're going to keep waiting.
That was my other big point, is that we can point to the entire rotation that is sitting on the IL in deGrom and Scherzer and Malley. I know Dunning just came back. Eovaldi is also hurt, right? But the returns of all those guys is completely unclear, right? So you can't just be like, oh, we're going to have the best rotation in baseball in August. There's no worries. Like, okay. The odds of all five of those guys being in the rotation at the same time this season are very low. And so if you're just counting on that, I don't think you can. And so I hope we see some of those guys in the second half. But that would be my concern with the Rangers. Now, again, they're not the only team with serious flaws in this division. We'll get to that later. But that's just kind of where I'm at with this Texas team that clearly, while, you know, defending your title is hard, and they were a flawed team last year, they are going to have something. I'm waiting for them to give me a reason to remember why they were clearly contenders coming into the season.
Hey, you know that meme of the skeleton in front of the computer? It's like, still waiting. That's Jacob deGrom, okay? Who we've been over this before. When he's healthy, he's amazing. He is the opposite of reliable. You cannot bank. It's not like we're going to turn the calendar to July and Jacob deGrom is just going to show up immediately and be healthy and dominant. You know what? Actually, he might. He might. That would be awesome. That's like what we want to happen. But it's just not a way to expect things to go. And I do think that we needed to see a little bit more zest from the defending champion Texas Rangers. One more topic before we take a break. This is an email. You can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com, BARBcast. Email itself is like mail, but online. I'll explain it later. This is from Daniel. Hi, Jake and Jordan. I hope that you both are doing well. Yeah.
We are. Yeah. Thanks, Dan.
You doing well?
Yeah, I'm doing good. Well.
I have what I hope is a fun question for both of you that I will also send to Ben and Meg at Effectively Wild to hopefully see where your thought processes align or differ. Mm. Wow. I feel
I don't know, Dan. Like, I would prefer the email exclusivity, but continue. This is a good question. We are reading it.
I was on the phone with Meg yesterday. I should have just told her to sandbag her response so I could look better. This question revolves around MVP chants and chanting for awards in general. Found myself thinking about fans chanting MVP for their team's best player, even sometimes for a role player who is having a great game. That is a funny thing. I agree. This feels very much like an NBA thing, but I know there are examples of it in baseball and other sports. I find that the acronym works well for chanting. MVP sounds a lot better than hearing an entire basketball crowd chanting sixth man of the year or six boy. This led me wondering what both of you would find to be the funniest award that fans could chant for. It doesn't have to sound as smooth as MVP. In fact, part of what makes it funny could be the clunkiness. Imagine an entire crowd chanting manager of the year as Aaron Boone walks out to make a pitch change. Or maybe chanting platinum glove award winner or P-Gaw after a good defensive play by a bad defender. I'm interested to hear what you think would be the funniest, craziest, and or strangest award to chant for in a baseball game. I hope you have fun with the exercise. Best regards, Daniel Labriola. Okay, first thing that comes to mind is sponsorships. Mm-hmm. Okay, so chanting Rolaids Relief Man of the Month.
Yep. I have a very easy answer that came up. But before I get to that, I mean, again, right? So what are the other ones that would be funny in terms of awards that we used to write? The Rolaids Relief, I think, has been changed.
Is that a season?
It's just the reliever of the year. I think the word passed. I think Rolaids lost the sponsorship.
Oh,
now we're bringing it back. Yeah, so sucks for them right now. Oh, I guess it's still... No, I think now it's called the Trevor Hoffman and Mariano Rivera Award.
Damn, Rolaids getting... But getting swiped by Mo.
I think comeback player of the year is a funny one.
Yes.
I think that Silver Slugger, again, think about what you can chant. But the one that comes to mind for me, I mean, Jake, what's our favorite award that we talk about every year? And I don't think we have them yet this season.
It's hard and hustle, baby.
Hard and hustle. I mean, you can imagine, again, I'm looking at, you know, the list from last year, like IKF, right, who of course won it last year.
He comes up and hard hustle.
As he like busts it down the line after grounding out to second base.
He's
again.
Out. Yeah. A Hard and Hustle Award is our favorite award. It is the most nebulous, silly, like you're doing great. You are like a good guy kind of award. The Roberto Clemente Award, which is,
that's
I believe,
right.
like humanitarian
service.
Community service.
Yes. That deserves, again, like that's where we should be going, you know, full standing ovation. It's just like praising that in like a close game. You know, it's like a guy comes up as like the tying run. You know, are we really focused on his humanitarian work? But we probably should be. You know, that's we always talk about how this is not, he's a better person than a player, and you know, he's a great player. So, but no, Hard and Hustle, I think we should be cheering for that more.
So one that comes to mind for me is Player of the Week and or Player of the Month, because Player of the Week is so funny to me that they give it out. I was in Baltimore, okay, when Colton Cowser won it, and then I believe Jordan Westberg won it right after him, and they were joking about how they wanted to three-peat, and how Gunner had like a bad Sunday, and Colton Cowser was like, Gunner really like blew it for us. We would have three-peated Player of the Week, and you don't get anything. By the way, for Player of the Week.
Oh, yeah.
There's no bonus. There's no
car.
Just tweet the graphic and there's a press release and you get an email and they move on. So I think Player of the Week is amazing. Like if a guy's on a heater and it's like, oh, man, Player of the Week.
So it's funny you mention that, though, because I'm pretty sure Baseball Cube, which, in my opinion, is a very underrated website for very, very specific things, And this is
who
one of
is
them,
the hitting coach for the 2013 Lexington Legends. Baseball Cube will tell you.
Very helpful. Some draft research stuff is good. But I do know that they track Player of the Week. And so you can go on players' pages. And I don't think this is on Baseball Reference. But like, for example, I pulled this up. I just totally random. Manny Machado.
Manny Machado. I knew that.
Okay.
I knew it was Manny Machado was like the Player of the Week legend.
How many times do you think he's won it? Because it's like, all right, he's been, again, what does he have going for him? He's been good for a long time and he's generally been very healthy, right? So a lot of weeks.
Six.
It looks like he's won it 8 times. And he
has That's two months.
No, but then he also has 2 Player of the Months award, which seems to
overlap
with some of them. Okay. So anyway, so that's fun. If you go to a player's Baseball Cube page, and you click on awards at the top, you can find some very, very interesting stuff. So they have high school All American on here. So
Gatorade Player of the Year is a hilarious thing to chant for a player who like used to
that
be
was
good
like 10 years ago.
Caleb Cowart. Like the Gatorade Player of the Year, but he was not like a great big leaguer. Yes, so you just chant that for him when he's, you know, 0 for 20.
Yes. No, that is very anyway, yeah, we're probably forgetting all kinds of other hilarious awards, but that is
Math Olympiad 2011.
Yeah, this is so well. Now I want to, you know, dig in right on the other awards, or like you know, other sports, right? Like, oh, this dude, you know, was like Mr. Basketball in Colorado or something.
Third team all conference as a junior.
Yeah. Anyway. All right. Great email from Dan. You can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com.
Beat that, Meg.
We are going to take a quick break and we'll be right back here on this Friday edition of Baseball Barbacast.
And welcome back to Baseball Barbacast. Jake Mintz, Jordan Schusterman. You and I, see too much Major League Baseball nowadays, yeah, Jordan, I have to say. Major League Baseball is the best baseball, but is it the best baseball? And that's the question I bring here today. I, yesterday, journeyed out to Lehigh Valley, Pennsylvania, to see the Lehigh Valley Iron Pigs at Coca-Cola Park. I would say one of our favorite minor league venues, no question. A consistently phenomenal experience there in Lehigh Valley. But I did not go for the Iron Pigs or for the bacon stuff or even to see Aramis Garcia hit a 430-foot home run, which was remarkable. I went to see the road team. The Rochester Red Wings were in town, and their gargantuan 6'7 center fielder, James Wood, who is 21 years old, I believe, is one of the top prospects in all of baseball. Some might even believe him to be the toppest prospect. And so I thought it prudent and worthwhile to go to Lehigh Valley to see James Wood. But before I talk about seeing James Wood and talking to James Wood, Jordan Schusterman, Baseball Barbacast prospect analyst, could you give our listeners a rundown of James Wood's timeline and explain to them why he is particularly relevant at this moment in time?
Right. So, you know, 6'7 center fielders, there are not that many of them. And you know who one of them is. But
Aaron?
Yeah, I think his name is Aaron. And there's another one named Spencer. But James Wood is pretty, pretty, pretty special, because what he has kind of become as far as a polished hitter over the last few years is really impressive. This is someone who kind of grew up in the DC area, as of course you'll kind of talk about here in a second. But for his senior year, he went to IMG Academy in Florida to kind of face some better competition, entering his draft spring. He was committed to Mississippi State, but ultimately the San Diego Padres took him in the second round, and he was very quickly like, oh, yep, this guy is very, very, very special. And there was a lot of intriguing ingredients in there, but it was like, wow, it's not what it normally looks like when you're that tall. You're that honestly still kind of skinny, and he was left-handed, and it was just so unusual that it's harder for scouts to like be like, yes, like I believe in that, when you haven't necessarily seen it before. It's exciting, but it's also scary. But he quickly showed that he was extremely advanced. He signs with the Padres for a couple million dollars, and then he becomes one of the centerpieces in that Juan Soto trade at the deadline in 2022. And he had been outstanding, you know, in the Padres system. This was a situation where he had been everything you could have hoped him to be as a prospect. And the Nationals clearly they got a lot else, as we know, in that deal. But James Wood was, as far as a future centerpiece, this was really the one to dream on. And last year with the Nationals, in his first full year with the Nationals, very promising. He hit 26 home runs in the minor leagues, but he struck out a lot, 173 strikeouts last season, had some struggles with lefties. He reached Double-A, and you saw it. It was still very encouraging, but you started to see the flaws. It wasn't surprising to see someone with his limbs having some issues, you know, covering some parts of the strike zone. It was not like flags for concern, but it was like, okay, this is going to be something he's going to have to figure out before he reaches the major leagues. And boy,
which, by the way, let's just be clear. That is something that Aaron Judge struggles with every single day. Okay.
Well, remember Aaron Judge, when he was dealing with this in the minors, was 24, 25, right? This is James Wood when he was 20. Okay. And so it was just like, okay, this is something to watch. And while we expect to see James Wood in the big leagues at some point in 2024, he's going to have to make some adjustments. And boy, has he done that. He has cut his strikeout rate by a ton. He's crushing left-handed pitching. He's doing it in AAA. And now he's got an OPS over 1,000. And he is knocking on the door of the major leagues, which is why you went to see him and talk to him and prepare for who is going to be another very unique player that is entering the major league space.
He is a singular watch. That's the first thing I would say. Aaron Judge is built like a tight end, right? And that is its own unique thing. He is sturdy. I would not describe James Wood as sturdy. Okay? He's not flimsy,
no.
But he is built more like an NBA wing player, right? Like a 3-and-D guy,
yep,
than he is a tight end or obviously a baseball player. Okay, he is 6'7". He is incredibly long. I would say he's probably like 220 pounds, which when you're that tall is really not that much. And what I found most interesting about watching him is the ease with which he moves around the field. I'm going to write all about this, but there were scouts when he was an amateur who were concerned with him potentially having what you would call a low motor, right? That there's like a level of lackadaisicalness on the field, which, you know, a way to describe this would be like the way that Manny Machado plays third base or Robinson Cano played second base, right? Where it doesn't look high effort and it looks so low effort that it's like, does this guy care, right? And the answer is very much yes, duh, because you don't make these types of swing changes and you don't become this type of player if you don't care. And I got to talk to James Wood and kind of ask him about this. And it was really interesting because he understands the person he is. Like, he's super chill, like comically laid back, very nonchalant, like, yeah, like I'm just trying to hit the ball. Like he's incredibly smart. But what I think is most impressive about him is that he's not overthinking anything and he's very self-aware. And so he's like, yeah, like I know scouts thought I had a low motor, but it's like each of my steps is bigger. Like I'm running hard. It just takes me longer and I'm still really fast. And like I am doing the work that I need to do behind the scenes. And I know that. And it shows on the field. And like, what am I going to do? Like, bust it down the line, high up, like
yeah, Brandon Nimmo really taking a walk for him. It's not going to happen. Yeah.
And it was just interesting to kind of talk to him about that. I really like this kid, dude. He is so intelligent about not letting all of this kind of swallow him up. I was asking him, I said, you know, Aaron Judge has to do so much regular work to get to the pitch that's up and in, right? Because his arms are so long, it's tough for him to get to that spot. How do you handle that pitch? You're similarly built. And he just was like, I don't know, I just kind of get to it. And I was like, honestly, that is a better answer than a detailed explanation of how he gets to it, right? Because that just means he is gifted and it is unspoken skill and talent and ability and hard work. And so that was super cool and super interesting because for most players, you have to like pick it apart and do all these things to get to the bat to them. And he's just like, oh yeah, like I know I had to get my bat to that place. So I just kind of got it there.
I figured it out. And it reminds me of, you know, this one home run that he hit I think it was the summer before his, maybe even before his junior year or before his
Well,
junior
we
year.
we really have not been talking about all the reporting I've been doing on James Wood, Jordan. Yeah. I should have filled you in
no,
on this.
No, I know. We've talked about this home run, but it's you can see it just
it
because.
It was the summer of 2020 before his junior year. I believe it was July 22nd, 2020.
Yes.
It is a pitch that is up and in. They are playing a tournament,
believe, in Georgia. It would have been before
he's heading into his senior year.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah.
Pitch up and in, like by his eyeballs, and he just gulps it like 7,000 feet to right.
It's like
tomahawks.
And the best part of the video is the reaction. Like people basically start screaming. it's very, very funny. But if you search, you know, Cespedes BBQ on Twitter and James Wood remember the name, you will see that clip. But anyway, it just reminds me like that was, you know, these special players do special things that make you think, oh, that guy's different. That guy looks different.
That guy's different.
And that is, he has been doing that for a while.
So two more James Wood quick things. He tweaked his hamstring in the game that I saw. I only saw two plate appearances. He walked on like a 9-pitch at bat, which was kind of dope. And then hit a hard ground out to second base. Tweaked his hamstring, got pulled in the middle of the game. Some people were like, oh, he's getting called up. That's not how that works. Usually, you know, guys don't get pulled in the middle of games when they're getting called up, especially if they're big league clubs on an off day. And then in terms of when he's going to get called up, I mean, again, what the heck do I know? I don't think it is going to be particularly soon. Mm. Like, I think it will be within, like, the next month.
Yeah, that's
but
what
I don't think it will be like the next 2 weeks. Yeah. Correct. And part of that is because the Nationals, like, they need to get rid of an outfielder. They need to trade an outfielder. They have
three.
Like, yes, they...
and listen, it's stupid to talk about these guys blocking them, but, like,
yes,
they brought in all these left-handed hitting veteran hitters, Winker, Rosario, and Gallo, who's been playing first, and they're still giving these guys run to presumably eventually flip them. And I don't think they're going to wait all the way until the trade deadline to bring up James Wood, but
I agree.
I guess it's possible. I just I don't know.
Their only other option, right, would be to DFA like Victor Robles or Rosario or Winker.
Yeah.
And I don't think that they're going to do that. And so I think that
Maybe they will, but I just think it's just a weird. Now, it's again, I understand that some people are like, it's stupid. James was one of their best players. Why are we two cares about these other veterans that are have no part of their future? I totally get that. This is just our sense. So,
yeah,
you know,
dude, I was talking to one of the guys on the Iron Pigs on the Triple A for the Phillies about Wood, and he just goes, why is he still here? He has nothing left to learn, right? Yeah. And I think that is an important dynamic.
It's a little different than the Skeens thing, right? Skeens, we talked about so much how it was building up. It was the same thing. There was an acknowledgement that there wasn't much for him to work on, but it was a workload thing. That's different with... Now, you could say, oh, we want him to see enough pitching, especially with hitters. We just saw that with Jackson Holliday. You're not going to learn anything with so many AAA hitters, right? At some point, you got to go face the best pitchers in the world, and I hope he gets the opportunity to do that soon, and I do think that he will. I think it will happen at some point in June. I think it will be less than a month. I think we're recording this on May 24th. I think he will be up before June 24th. Again, this is not reporting. This is just total speculation. That is just my feeling on it. But hopefully he's also not injured. You know, hopefully he's fine. He'll be back soon.
I have some reporting on it. I'm going to report that Jordan just speculated.
Okay, thank you. I know there was one other part of the James Wood experience was someone else in attendance that you wanted to mention. So please do that, and then we'll do the good, the bad, the ugly.
I almost forgot this. When we go to minor league games, we will put our things down in the press box, and then we will go sit in the crowd often, right? Because I want to be as close as possible to see James Wood. And I go and I sit behind the plate near all the scouts because you never know who you're going to see. If you know somebody, you say hello. And if you don't, you make a friend, whatever. And last night I made a friend named Dusty Baker, who was in attendance, legendary manager, because his son Darren is on the AAA Nationals team. He's playing left field, which is weird.
That is weird for them.
Yeah. Very odd. But he's leading off and hit a couple balls hard, had some hits last night. And there's Dusty, who was managing the Astros last year, just sitting 10th row at Coca-Cola Park in Lehigh Valley. And people are, you know, just coming up to him relentlessly. Sign this. Can you take a picture? Whatever. And I'm sitting right there. I asked, you know, his wife, like, you ever get asked for an autograph? She laughs. Blah, blah, blah. Okay. Then, like, I'm sitting kind of diagonal from Dusty and his wife, and next to me sits down like an older lady and her husband, maybe probably in their 60s. And Dusty turns and says, hi, good evening. And she's like, hi, how you doing? Good, good. And they start, you know, just friendly. And people keep coming up to Dusty, right? And this woman turns to me and she goes, who is this guy? What's his deal? And Dusty turns around and he smiles and she says, why do these people keep coming up to you? And he goes, oh, I used to manage a little bit, which is the biggest understatement of all time. You're like,
no, he's right.
He managed a little bit, a whole lot. And I then go, Dusty and I had already kind of acknowledged each other, right? Like he remembered me and a little bit from being around.
Postseason, right last year. Yep.
Postseason 2 years ago.
2 years ago.
In the World Series, right? And I said, Dusty, you're sure as hell not going to tell this woman who you are, so I'm going to do it. And he said, okay. And I said, here's the resume. Okay. And this is like Dusty is like watching me go through his resume off the top because like I obviously know it.
Did he edit anything? Did he correct you?
It was great. I'm just like only manager in MLB history to win to make the playoffs with five different teams, right? Top 10 all time in wins, played in the big leagues for over 18 years, played with Hank Aaron, claims to have invented the high five, won the World Series, his first ring in 2022 with the Houston Astros, will almost certainly be inducted into the MLB Hall of Fame within the next 5 years. His name is Dusty Baker. And the second Dusty's watching me like recite his own resume back to him. And the woman goes, that's Dusty Baker? And like, Dusty just starts laughing his ass off.
I love that this person could like know that Dusty Baker is someone in the universe.
A character, yes.
That is important, but could not figure out that they were sitting right in front of him, right? But honestly, that's the beauty of it. And also, like, while it does sound like he was being consistently bothered or at least talked to, I'm sure he was fine. He understands that that's what happens when you go in public as Dusty Baker. But that's also the beauty of going in public even to minor league games where there's people that are still going to be like, what's his deal? I'm just here. We're just humans here at this, here watching the, you know, here in Bacontown, USA, watching the pigs.
Watching the pigs. That's the big.
Darren Baker will be a big leaguer at some point this year too. Yeah. I'm sure he's having a nice season and definitely a cool story.
At one point, Dusty's like, "Man, I gotta hire you."
It's your personal PR. Just walk around and explain people, so he doesn't have to be like, "Yeah, I'm Dusty Baker."
This is Dusty Baker. I was like, he wasn't gonna do that, right? Like, no, Dusty wasn't gonna turn around and be like, "You know, I'm the only manager who's taken five separate franchises to the postseason."
No, he's not gonna do that. All right, Jake, we've gone a little long, but it's still Friday. We got to do the good, the bad, the ugly. So let's get into it. Something good, something bad, something ugly from this week. Why don't you start us off with something good?
Bryce Harper's promposal, baby. This is one of my favorite stories of the season. Quote, this is the MLB.com article. Quote, obviously I said yes, Harper helps out with promposal. Basically, there was a video that popped up on the internet of Bryce Harper and a teenage boy outside of a house. The doorbell is rung. The door opens, a teenage girl opens the door, basically goes, holy crap, that's Bryce Harper. Bryce goes, this guy wants, whose name is Jake. Jake wants to ask you to prom. And she says, yes. Okay. Unbelievable. Hilarious. Good for Bryce Harper. But the backstory cracks me up. Jake Portella, a student at Haddonfield Memorial High School in New Jersey, wanted to ask his date to prom next month, but was still kicking around some ideas. I was talking to one of my friends. He said, there's some Phillies players who live in town. It'd be cool if I could get one of them to help me with it. This is from Paul Casella. That's when he decided to take the biggest swing of his life. The senior went and knocked on Harper's door. What? He knocked on Harper's door.
Oh, no.
Like a Jehovah's Witness.
Yes. He went. wow. Excuse me, sir. Do you have a moment to ask this girl to prom for me?
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. The high school senior went and knocked on Harper's door, explained the situation, asked Harper if he'd be willing to do anything, maybe even make a video to help him out. Harper said, like, oh, let me take your email and see what I can do. Then the kid's like turning around and Harper's like, can we do it right now? And the kid's like, yeah. So they just walk over to this girl's house.
Oh.
They walk over to the house, ring the doorbell. She opens it. She's like, oh my God, it's Bryce Harper. Whatever. So good. Oh, here's Harper's quote on it. Ready? Just helping a brother out, man, Harper said.
That's okay. That's also so relatable for him being like, can we do it right now? Because this is something we've experienced where like big leaguers are both extremely busy and also have nothing to do. And it goes on and off, right? And so Correct. It's like Bryce Harper in that moment when he happened to knock on his door had nothing to do. And so he was like, listen, at some point soon, I'm not going to have time to do this. So I have time to do this right now. So we're going to do it right now.
We're going to do it right now.
And so that is, wow, that's incredible. Another great moment in Bryce Harper, Philadelphia area pandering history. Good job, Bryce.
Just knocking on the door. Knocking. He just knocked on Bryce Harper's door. Dude.
There's video, like, right? It's great. So good.
It's so good. Also, because here's the thing, right? You would think that if you were Bryce Harper in like a foofy neighborhood in New Jersey, like people wouldn't bother, like people would bother you all the time, but they don't bother you because it's like, I don't want to bother Bryce. True. Like, he needs his rest.
Yeah. Yeah.
Go Phil.
I'm a little surprised how easy it was for this kid to get to Bryce Harper's door. But that's, I'll just move that aside and be glad that it worked out for the best. My good this week is Taylor Saucedo of the Seattle Mariners.
Oh, yes.
Okay. So if you've ever wondered, like, we have a time to say, oh, okay, he plays for the team that he grew up rooting for. Oh, that's so cool. But that doesn't necessarily mean that the guy who's on, and for background, Taylor Saucedo, Mariners reliever, who's currently injured, and that's very relevant, grew up in the Pacific Northwest, grew up a huge Mariners fan. They claim him on waivers a couple years ago. He becomes a big part of their bullpen. And now he is just, but like, this is the difference. And this is why I'm bringing this up as good. It's not just that he grew up, he is a fan of the team. And if you don't believe me, tune into one of his Twitch streams while he's been injured, where he's just like playing Call of Duty and watching the game. And it's like watching just a Mariners fan who is it's nuts.
It's like watching Mariners Joe's McFly is what
exactly.
It is.
Except he's on the team. And a big part, it's so, so, so funny. Now, the good one that this is both good and bad. He tweeted earlier this week when the Mariners had these big wins against the Yankees, when they were losing, or maybe this might have been one of the games before. He tweeted this, which is just so relatable as someone who's now, you know, follows a lot of Mariners people on my personal account. He tweeted, "Twitter during the game is horrendous. Have to keep double checking the score. You'd think we're losing by 20. Exactly. That's exactly why I don't tweet during the game, because all people want to do is freak out from on a pitch to pitch. Anyway, then he goes on Twitch and you can see these clips of him as the Mariners have this comeback and they bring in Mooney. It's just so, I just cannot recommend it enough. And he's already had a rehab appearance last night, so he'll be back soon. So unfortunately, the Saucedo content is going to at least slow down for a little bit, but it is a truly uniquely relatable presentation of fandom for someone that is also an active part of the team. It is so, so funny. So shouts out to Taylor Saucedo. You kept me very entertained this week. That is my good. Jake, what is your bad?
Speaking of the upside of fandom, here's a story about the downside of fandom. It's called Being a Fan of the Pirates.
We thought they were turning it around. They have series win over the Cubs. They have this huge win, comeback win to open the series against the Giants. And then even in a game that Paul Skenes pitches and looks great again, they blow 4-run leads in consecutive games. And it's just such a tough watch. And it's just so frustrating. Not that there's like obvious solutions internally to fix some of these roster holes, but come on. Like,
come on.
You're again, as I said, when Skenes first came up, like, you're not far enough out of it yet that you can't make this interesting. Like, you have an opportunity here to stay relevant and they're not.
Brent Honeywell's really right there at Triple A, baby. He's right there.
Give Honey a chance. Please just try something else offensively. And I don't know. It's so bad.
It's bad. Skenes yesterday in his third start, 6 innings, 6 hits, only 3 Ks. I went back and watched some of it. You're right. You said this earlier to me. Clearly trying to pitch to contact more so he could work deeper into the game, which awesome that he like is able to do that. He's like, okay, time to pitch to contact, because I understand he only threw 6, but he probably could have thrown 7 if he had been built up.
He was on pace to throw 7 or 8 and then he got away from him a little bit later. And then it sucks because, by the way, why do you think he wants to pitch deeper into the game?
Because the bullpen is not good. The bullpen is not good.
As we saw, still not good. So anyway.
Not a good bullpen. What's your bad?
God, it's just, man, he's, I don't care how bad the Pirates are. I am so excited to watch him. I'm a little bummed he, you know, didn't pitch against the Braves this weekend, but every start will be a point of viewing. I hope I get to see him against the Dodgers in person in a couple of weeks. My bad is also AL West related. It's the AL West. They are the only team in baseball. only division of baseball where all 5 teams have a negative run differential. And I just wanted to bring up, we got another email from another Daniel who basically just brought up the concept that, like, the Guardians, by the way, Guardians fans, I'm wearing a Stephen Kwan jersey today. Give you guys some love. I know a lot of Royals chat earlier this week. But, you know, we assumed after last year, you know, looking at the wildcard picture that, okay, well, obviously we're only going to have one AL Central team in the mix here in the wild card. I mean, right now we're heading towards a situation where we're going to have multiple AL Central and AL East teams and just one AL West team. And that is a pretty, and a lot of time left, but that would be a pretty shocking outcome. If I don't know what kind of odds you could have gotten on that before the season, but these teams are just very, very flawed. All of them, Rangers, Mariners, and Astros, have extreme strengths and extreme weaknesses. And it has been a slog. They are a very expensive version of the AL Central battles that we have been watching.
You think those teams are flawed, buddy? Wait till I show you the Angels. All right, my ugla this week comes courtesy of Mason Wynn. So the Cardinal City Connect uniforms dropped earlier on Monday, and we loved them. I think we gave them a positive review, a couple thumbs up. Yeah. And, you know, they do this on the broadcasts. They ask the players for their thoughts. And usually the players, even if they don't like them, they find a way to say that in a constructive manner, right? Or they just will ask the players to say something nice and not even, you know, reply honestly. Or they, you know, won't air it at all. The Cardinals on Bally Sports
Midwest.
Bally Sports Emo's Pizza. They asked Mason Wynn his thoughts on the City Connects, and Mason Wynn goes, honest opinion? Well, they're definitely City Connects.
This is a great Gen Z moment where Mason Wynn cannot even, he's like,
you can't lie.
He's like, you did ask me for my honest opinion.
And you so asked, dude. Honest opinion. They could have said, what's your favorite part of the uniform? Right? And he just would have been like, dude, I love the pants piping. Right? And that would have been fine to like run that clip. I love that it says the Lou, you know? Instead, he just freaking ethers these things.
With very few words, you understand exactly how he feels.
They're definitely City Connects.
Ugh, that's a tough look. Very funny production decision.
And I would say you and I, okay, great point. The decision to put this on the air is a worse decision than Mason Wynn saying this. Yes. There's my take. And you and I, who spent some time with Mason in the Bahamas, got to know him a little bit, very, you know, par for the course. Big fan of this guy. He does not beat around the bush, baby.
You ask him for his honest opinion, he will give it to you. All right, Jake. My ugla is also attire related. It is the Blue Jays home run jacket returning. Now, This is very interesting. The thing I want to focus on, though, the short version is...
Can you give the timeline, please?
Okay. 2021, Blue Jays introduce a home run jacket. Of course, this is when home run props are exploding across the league.
2022. They were early, though, I think.
2021, yes. But. It was 2021 was when we first see it. It is a jacket that is...
A blazer.
Basically a blazer that the players receive when they after they hit a home run. And this was a really cool jacket. It was not just that it was a cool blue suit with a Blue Jays logo on it. The theme of it was... What it says is La Gente del Barrio, which translates to the people of the neighborhood. Basically, it was a kind of the idea of, I believe, the team interpreter and one of their coaches, Hector LeBron. And basically, on the back of it, there's a list of a bunch of countries. And the countries were not just the countries of the players who are on the roster, but also of the coaching staff and of the support staff for the roster, or for the team, for the Blue Jays organization. So there's a bunch of it. And so you could see on the very first edition of this 2 years ago, there's a lot of really interesting countries that are represented. It's not just the Dominican Republic, you know, and Venezuela and Mexico and Puerto Rico and the countries we're associated with international baseball. And the theme was, okay, Canada, you know, it's we're Canada's team and it was a very global city and we wanted to do that. And the reason I bring this up as ugla is since, you know, in 2022, they add a few more countries to the back. And then after 2022, John Schneider, going into 2023, gives this quote about how, essentially in reference to why they are not wearing the jacket anymore. This quote that we made fun of a ton of at the time, which is basically him being like...
It wasn't his call, we found out later.
It wasn't necessarily his idea, but essentially somewhere internally, there was a decision to no longer wear the jacket. And that was because they were like, we want to no longer just be this fun young team. We are trying to take things more seriously. And, you know, this is, it's not about home run props. We're trying to, you know, we're trying to win, you know, blah, 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 blah. Now, that strategy clearly over the last year and a half has worked at some times and has not worked at others. And this season, the Blue Jays have not been good. And so it seems that they decided that we can continue to be hardos in last place, or we can try something fun and bring back the home run jacket. But the reason I bring this up as Ugly Jake is because the newest edition of this jacket has added another 15 or so countries to the back, to the point where we have over, I believe, around 50 countries represented on the back of this jacket, which I posted, the Blue Jays posted an image of it. And I am just fascinated by the countries that are included and not included, because since 2021, they have, the first round, we have Japan and Korea and Mexico. Then 2022, we add England and Australia and Israel makes it on there, and Jamaica and Pakistan and Spain are added in 2022. Now we got El Salvador on there. We got Finland. We got Guatemala,
Vietnam,
and Switzerland, and Vietnam, and Nigeria, and Indonesia. It is an incredible, and I don't know if this is a representation that they have people with roots in these countries working in this organization. I hope so. But I am just fascinated as to who made the cut and who didn't.
I think the funniest outcome is that people are not from these places, and they just were like, screw
exactly.
it. Egypt.
Exactly. And so I pulled up a list. I said, okay, let's look at who are the biggest snubs. Who has been snubbed from this jacket, right? Let's sort by world population and see which countries have not made it.
A couple
contenders emerge.
Am I missing Brazil?
Brazil's on there.
Brazil's on there.
Brazil's on there. Here are the biggest snubs from a population standpoint.
You can't put Russia on there.
Okay, so Russia's the obvious one, but Russia, that's fine. I wouldn't want to put it. That's fine. Bangladesh. You know, number eight.
Oh, dude. Number eight. That's a huge place.
Bangladesh not being on there is, we have Pakistan, we have India on there. No Bangladesh is tough. No Ethiopia.
You can't spell Bangladesh without bang. Jays want to bang.
That seems like an obvious one. No Tanzania. No South Africa, from what I can tell. That is probably the most surprising one. And I got to say, as someone who lived in Denmark for 3 months, the fact that Finland and Sweden and Norway all got on here without Denmark just crushes me. That one just absolutely tears me apart.
Czech Republic? Yeah. You see the Czech Republic?
I don't think we have Czechia, as it is now referred to. I don't think we have Poland on there. So the reason I bring this up is I hope that the jacket sustains. I hope that next year we cram on another 10 nations, and I hope it just keeps growing to where we have all the countries in the world represented on this silly home run jacket. Thank you, Blue Jays, for bringing it back.
Can we please have someone with the Blue Jays let us know, are we adding these for reasons or for vibes? Both are fine, but I just find it very unlikely that someone in the Blue Jays organization is Norwegian. I don't think they have a Norwegian, an Austrian.
I don't know. Again,
Frencher?
A Frenchman. But yeah, again, some big snubs here. I think your point about Bangladesh is spot on.
Australia being red and blue on here is a big
colors
miss,
are I so mean. Random too. That's my other favorite part about it. So everything about this jacket I love, but I do have questions, and that is why I brought it up as my ugly.
I mean, one quick impressive thing. I mean, do they have 55 different fonts?
Right. So my account is 49 jerseys, and that's the thing. The fonts are random. It's
unbelievable.
It's great. But I would just love to know more about that. I guess I am going to see the Blue Jays later this season. So I will hopefully get to ask them about that at some point. All right, Jake, we've gone over an hour. You have some driving to do. What are you looking forward to watching this weekend? I will be seeing the Dodgers in Cincinnati. This will be my last series in Cincinnati probably this season, as I am moving next week. More on that next week. So I'm excited to see the Dodgers in person. Other than that, I would say the Yankees and the Padres is the series I'm most looking forward to watching. But anything else?
I will be at Brewers Red Sox tonight in Boston.
Ooh, okay. That's some delicious interleague matchup. And then the opposite of Interleague is Cubs-Cardinals, which is happening for the first time all season. I sent out a tweet earlier this week about a number of division matchups we still have not seen yet, including Yankees-Red Sox has not happened yet, which is pretty astounding. But maybe that's
thank God.
For the best. Maybe that's for the best. But yeah, there's all kinds of weird schedule quirks. Like the A's and Angels don't play until the end of June, and then they play like 13 times in the span of 20 games. So just preparing both of you fan bases for that one. But, you know, the schedule is weird now because it is balanced. But honestly, I like it.
I hope the Cubs kick St. Louis's butt so WashU grad Ryan Lutis can get into a game. Thank you so much for listening. Thank you to Andrew Hartz for producing. Thank you to Jordan Schusterman for being my friend. Anything else?
Got it. You can email us at baseballbarbacast@gmail.com. That's BARBcast. And we will talk to you all next week. Have a wonderful, wonderful weekend. We will be giving you a podcast on Memorial Day. So we'll talk to you then.